Lecture 23. No place for a past or a future. That sounds like an interesting concept, doesn't it? No place for a past or a future. Any thought is a thought in the now. Any thought is a thought in the now. How often have we thought about who we are and what we are? How often have we thought, where is our place in life? Where is our place in the universe? We have no place for a past or a future. We only live in the absolute present. No matter how exciting it may be to us to think of the past and dwell upon the things that have happened from our point of view, or even to think of the future and to think of the wonderful things that may come about in our world. It's wonderful to think about it, and really that's all we're doing is thinking about it. But yet, every time we think of the past, we put ourselves back in the past. We put ourselves back in the consideration of what is going on in the past. We're thinking of things that took place yesterday, things that are not taking place today. We're thinking of things that, you know, had happened and from our point of view. But yet, when we think about them, we're reestablishing them in our life. We are re-empowering them to be an experience for us. One way of looking at it is when we sort of shudder as we think of the near miss of an accident. Oh my God, you know, it was so close to being clobbered by that other car. So close to coming against that tree. I was driving along and then I realized I was coming in close to that tree and I was panicky and I was nervous and I had no power to do anything. And then at the last minute I turned the wheel and drove away from the tree. Ah! We have all that panic in our body. We have all that feeling, all that emotion. And we're reliving the past experience. And we're making it so that our body, our adrenaline is plowing away and all of our attitudes are just on top of it. What a waste of energy. What an utter waste of energy. You know, if we can do that, and if we can think in the past and relive adventures we have in the past, why not put those thoughts onto a more positive way? Put those thoughts onto, considering some dream that we have for ourselves right in the now. What dream do you have for yourself? What would be the greatest, most wonderful thing that could ever happen to you? Would the most wonderful thing that could ever happen to you be to be an accomplished person in a particular area? Say, for instance, you'd like to be an accomplished writer. I run into this quite often with all of our students and our friends. They'd all like to be accomplished writers. Hey, you know, the eternal book that dwells within everyone that they'd like to accomplish, they'd like to publish, or they'd like to write that novel that has never been written, that never been written by them, the bestseller, oh my goodness. Well, think about it. To write a novel, to write anything, is really of no consequence. But to live an adventure, to live a concept, to live a thought, that is the adventure. Let's just take anything. All right, I'm sitting here looking at a stapler. And this stapler sits here doing nothing. It's a wonderful stapler. It's my favorite stapler. Oh, there's lots of staplers I have. Staplers that you push with your hand, the staplers that you clap with your hand, and staplers that are electric. And at one time, Stefan bought a battery-operated stapler, which works quite nicely. And these staplers are wonderful. But here's a stapler. It's a little gray stapler. It fits in your hand. And I had bought that, 40 years ago. And it still works just perfect. It uses little RX staples and 3/16 legs, and it's called a Markwell staples that are put into it. And you click it with your hand, and it's a sure done thing every time. It doesn't staple thick pads, but it staples a normal things, 2, 3, 5, 8, sheets of paper very nicely. Now, why is it that more staplers are not out there that work continuously like this does? 40 years, and it's still in excellent shape. 40 years, and the gray enamel is still there. It looks beautiful, sort of a marbled enamel, and it tells the thickness of the papers to go between it, because if you try to stick more papers and it'll fit in there, it just won't go in. It is a predetermined stapler, but it works beautiful. And I'd like to design a new stapler now. Okay, the predetermined idea of the amount of paper is a good thing, because this way I know about the strength that the stapler must be. I know about the type of staples it must use. I know its construction. Now, having it be mechanical is excellent. Having it be battery-operated, I've always got to be concerned about the batteries. That's not too bad, because it lasts a long time. Or, if it's electrical, I always have to make sure that I have a plug somewhere to plug it in. But I'd like to have something that is just like my little gray stapler here. It's always with me, always available, always handy, fits right into the palm of my hand, just beautiful. And nobody else wants it, because it's not a pretty thing according to the modern deco art that people have in type of office equipment. But, for instance, I'd like to have a new one. I'd like to have a new design. Well, now, would I design it so that my finger grip would fit on it nicely? Some of them have that. They have a finger grip on it so that you can put your fingers on and they'll just form fit into it. Would I like to have it be a little larger? No, this is just perfect. It fits right into my hand. I have a big hand, but it would fit into a little hand as well as a big hand. All right, now, what other thing would I think about it? These little staples are not the easiest thing to find on the market. They're just not everywhere present, but they could be. And if I knew where to go, then I could always go to the same place. But what am I trying to do here? Well, design a staple gun, a stapler that doesn't need staples. Well, now that's been done. They have ones that stick through the paper and pull out the paper that is a little sheaf and make the paper itself the staple. That's not been too popular. It's been used a great deal, but it's not been too popular because it is it messes up the paper. When you would like to take the staple out, you've always got those torn areas up in that one corner. So what kind of a stapler am I going to make? Well, at the moment, I cannot think of anything nicer than this little gray stapler that I have. It works just beautiful. And I cannot visualize any stapler doing a better job for the purposes that I have it than this one right here. Now you might say, well, you're certainly in a rut, Herb. You're not thinking creatively. You're not thinking dynamically. You're not off into a wonderful area of creating beautiful concepts, are you? You're just doing the ordinary thing and accepting the ordinary thing. Okay, perhaps I am. Any thought is thought in the now. Now, this little incident that I'm sharing with you about the stapler seems to be hardly worth the time that we're giving it. But it is worth the time, because I really am quite satisfied with that stapler. I'm quite satisfied with it. I have seen them around occasionally, not too often, but I've seen them around. They seem to have gone out of style, but occasionally there will be an old-timer who has the stapler and is very pleased with it. And I can understand that. I can understand that very well, because it is such a handy little thing. Now, I can go back into my mind and think how well I've used it over the past, or how well I might use it in the future, but when I do that, I am thinking about it in the personal present tense right now. I'm thinking about what I am doing with it right now. What are you doing with the things that are important to you right now? How are you thinking about your life and what your values are and what things turn you on? It's something, isn't it? It's really something to think about what turns you on, what excites you in the here and the now. Really, there are far too few things that excite us in the here and the now. Most of the things that we think about are our dreams, our wishes, our wants. And as we place our thinking and our consciousness on our dreams, our wishes, our wants, then that's where our thought is. Now, a cue that is very important here is this something that we dream is possible? Is this something we would like to be possible? Or is this something that we are thinking about right now and living with right now, and it is so for us right now? It is so real for us that we cannot imagine it not being so. Why, I really felt like my car was crashing into that tree. I really felt it. I really was right there then doing that thing. I really felt I was looking at this stapler on my desk and thinking to myself how wonderful that little stapler is and what a wonderful stapler that is and how I could use that and how helpful it is, and I use it under so many circumstances and I could use it here and use it there. But every time I think about it, I think about it how I'm doing something with it, how it is a useful object to me. Now, creative thoughts are like that. It's again an idea whose time has come, and this has come for me. Now, why is it that every single person on the face of the earth doesn't have a stapler like that in their possession? Well, the big reason is that most people don't think about it that often. They don't think the benefit of a stapler. They don't think the benefit of how they could use it and how they could put it to work in their life. I had not thought of it myself until I began thinking about it right now. It was just always something that was comfortable, that was there. How often do we go out and get in our car and drive away, and we get on the highway and we're cruising along, and then all of a sudden something comes loose or something makes a noise, and we say, I'll have to have that checked. Well, if we had a pain and we didn't investigate it right away, it exacerbates and becomes worse. When we have something go wrong with our car, we should immediately stop, check it out, and find out what's going on. And if it is something that we can take care of right away, then we do it. It's a very interesting thing to me that we bought a trailer, and it was from a trailer company, quite large, and it was about 12 feet long or better, and it had bolts on it. Now, these bolts had self-locking nuts on the bolts. But many of these self-locking nuts, as the trailer jiggled along over the years, came off. First the nuts came off, and then the bolts slid out. Well, I went to the store and I bought some more nuts and bolts that could be put in there and could make the trailer once again secure. But strangely enough, I gave the task to three different people, and everybody just set it aside to do it another time. And so one day I was looking at the trailer, and I saw the bolts, and I saw the things that seemed to be a problem, and I knew where the package of bolts was. It was on the workbench. So I went to the workbench, took the bolts out, and put them into the trailer. It took me about 10 minutes to put all the bolts into the trailer, and I put the bolts in so perfectly and so easily, and I put the lock nut on, and the trailer was nice and secure. It was a nice sound trailer, and it wouldn't jiggle or wiggle, or it wouldn't come apart anymore. But if I hadn't done that, pretty soon we'd be losing parts of our trailer as we go up and down the road, and we would not be very happy about that. Why is it that we don't put into the present tense the things that we have in the present tense? I oftentimes give instructions to the monks and to the staff here, and I say, I would like this done. Now, I could say, do this, with a very commanding way, and they would immediately go and do it. But when I say, I would like to do this, I give them the opportunity to agree or disagree. I give them the opportunity to cooperate or not. And it's a strange thing how when a person has the opportunity to cooperate, they oftentimes don't cooperate. They don't cooperate because they think they have the authority to put priorities in motion that they have for themselves. However, when the boss ever asks anyone to do anything, you do it because that's now your priority. It's not a matter that the things that you're working on are exceedingly important. It's not a matter that the boss's job is rather picky you and really not such an important thing to do, but it's a matter that we want to do our own thing. We want to walk our own path. We want to claim our own activity, and we want to put it in the future. We'll get to it. We'll get to it. And then somehow it never is gotten to. I know of any number of projects that I give out, and I give them out mostly as a test. I say, would you please do this? When you get around to it, I'd like to have you do this. And strangely enough, they don't get around to it. It's really interesting how they don't get around to it. And many times it's very important, the things that I offer them to do, because it's like putting the bolts on the trailer. If you don't put the bolts on the trailer, pretty soon the trailer is going to come apart. And I say to people, please fill the rear tire of the truck. It's low. And so they have to run in town. They zoom in town. They don't fill the rear tire. They come back. And then I see the tire is still low. And I tell the next person who's going to use the truck, I say, please fill the rear tire of the truck before you use it. And emergency comes up and they have to dash into camp, or they have to dash over here or there. And so they don't do it. And then another person's going to use it. And finally, I say to the next person, I say, before you use that truck, now fill that tire with air. And they'll look startled at me, as though I'm giving them a command of going to war or something like that. And then after a moment, they will go out and they will fill the tire and take care of it. And then I'll say, now when you go in town next time, have the tire examined by the tire company and see if perhaps there's a nail or something else in there that is causing it to have a slow leak. So months go by and that doesn't get done. So then I give a person a specific order. Go into town today and have that tire checked. Well, I don't have anything to go into town for. Go into town today and have that tire checked. But that's a waste of time. Go into town and have that tire checked. But I have other things that are more important. And after three times, I won't repeat it. I won't say it again. I'll just stop whatever I'm doing and take the truck, go into town, and have the tire checked. You see, we don't always have the authority to think things on our own. If we were handling the maintenance and doing the things that we should do, we would have our priority lists, and we'd have to change our priority list many times, because sometimes there would be a demand that comes upon us that we must act upon immediately. But we think that we know better. And perhaps we do. Perhaps we do know better. But what we don't know is that now is the only acceptable time. Now is the time for anything to be done. And if we don't do it in the now, then it is probably not going to be done at all. You say, well, that's not right, because it'll be done. It'll be done. Well, think about it. Think about it. How many times did I have to tell them to go in town to put air into the tire, or to put air into the tire before they go in town, because we have our own pump? And how many times did I say go in and have it checked? And each time they drove into town, they didn't do it. Now, am I poor at giving orders? Am I poor at giving instructions? Yes, I guess perhaps I am, because I don't like to be demanding and authoritative. I just like to offer suggestions to people and let them come to their own conclusion. But you know, the boss never offers a suggestion. Every idea the boss ever offers is a command. And this is something that should be immediately adhered to by whoever is being spoken to about it, and there is no choice in the matter. However, the boss allows you to feel there's a choice. He allows you to feel there's a choice because he wants you to put into the present tense whatever it is that's being done, and to know that now is the acceptable time. As I imagine past and future, I am in it now. I think about the past and future, and I am there right now. I think, well, gee, I really should have gone in and taken care of that tire like Herb told me, but there were so many things to do, and I had so many responsibilities. Well, I would say to you, how would you like to end up on the side of the road without a tire? Or how would you like to end up on the side of the road with a flat tire and have to fix it? If you just do the simple little things that you're asked to do at the time you're asked to do them, in the present tense, the first person, present tense, now, things like that don't happen. One of the wonderful things of being and living here at the monastery is that at the monastery, everything is in the first person present tense. All of our students write their lessons in the first person present tense. All of our talks and discussions here at the monastery are first person present tense. We don't talk about the past. We don't talk about experiences that we have had. We don't talk about things we'd like to do. We talk about things we're doing right now. I say, I would like it to have these joy songs published and have them out. And everyone says, well, yes, that's a good idea. We should do that. Well, it's not a matter of it's a good idea and we should do it. It's a matter that now is the time. Right now, whatever you're doing, stop and put out the joy song book. We only have a few of them left, and they go like hotcakes. Everyone loves them, and they enjoy them so. At all seminars, we take many along and distribute them and share them around, and people want to buy extra copies, and that's just wonderful. But if, for instance, I were to say to anyone, okay, now you have written 8 joy songs. You have created the words for these melodies, and they're beautiful. Now, I want those out. Well, you know what they'd go and do? They'd go and put them on a sheet of paper and insert them in a few of the old joy song books. I'd say, no. Do the entire book. We have it already on disc. We have it already. Just add a few to it and perhaps take a few out that we don't use very often. But get it going and zippity-doo, run it off. But there's so many corrections. Well, make the corrections. That's not any big deal. We've done that before. And then it's done. Then run off a couple thousand copies, and we distribute them around and share them. But now, the present tense, right now is the time to act upon this. But what do? We procrastinate. We put it off. If you have a sore on your leg, and it's bleeding, you cut yourself on a stick or something, or you scratched yourself, and I would say, go and put some Neopresin on there, Neosporin on there. Go and put some bandage on there. Go do something. You would immediately go and do it. Unless you're working hard and you don't even think about it, and then you sort of procrastinate and put it off. But if I say, stop, go in the house, wash it off, put something on there right now. Then you would follow my immediate order and do it. But the big thing is, why does it have to be such an intensive, hard-nosed thing to have that done? It is. And it is followed so often. But people want to live in the future. They want to live in the past, but they don't want to live in the present. In the present, for them, it's not a matter of being injured. It's not a matter of the scratch needing to have some attention. But what is it that they're doing? They're putting off things for tomorrow, putting off things. You say, well, my goodness, it's their scratch. They would certainly go take care of it right away. Not necessarily. How often have you instantly gone and take care of something? I remember a story that Ilse told us. Ilse had just poured herself a cup of tea, scalding hot, beautiful. And she went to answer the door. And as she opened the door, she was delighted to see a friend, and she spilled the tea on her wrist. And she shook her wrist and put the cup down and embraced her friend and talked to her friend for a good half hour. And then it came to her, she had scalded this, she had poured the scalding water onto her wrist. There should be some evidence of it. And she looked at her wrist, and there was no evidence of any burn. her attention had been taken away from it so completely that there was no indication. Now, perhaps this is what we're doing when we have our scratch and we don't pay any attention to it. Perhaps this is what we're doing. We're paying attention to the present. We're living in the present so completely that we don't even think of the past. We don't even think of something which is not here, something which is not real and not vital to us. But now let's step into another level of thinking on the past and the present and the future. There's no place for logic or reason in the allness. What has that got to do with the past and present and future? Well, logic and reason are something that we work with in our everyday affairs. Logic and reason. If it's logical, if it's reasonable, then we do it. Like if I say, put the bolts onto the trailer, or I say, fix the low tire. That's logical, that's reasonable. You'd think that someone would do that instantly. But we are like our divine counterpart. There is no logic or reason in the allness. And sometimes we like to think that we are in the allness. And that's great. That's great. When you can think of yourself in the allness, when you can think of yourself living in the absolute or living in absolute consciousness, you will not be concerned with the past, present, or future, logic, or reason. You will be in that state of allness, that consciousness of allness. Now, what happens to us in the consciousness of allness is that we no longer are concerned about everyday things. We're no longer concerned about putting bolts on the trailer or filling the tire with air or having it checked. We are concerned about only one thing. And this is a very simple thing. And you think that it's so simple, it's so easy that it cannot be true. And so very few people practice it. The statement is, all is in divine order. When we can make the statement, all is in divine order, we will find that all things are in divine order. But we have to make the statement. Does it come to our mind easily, simply, beautifully, when a circumstance comes up that it must be utilized? When we have a friend calling us and asking us questions and saying, help me with my problem, help me with this, help me with that, work with me on these things that are so devastating to my world and my life. What can I do? What can I do? And you say to the person, all is in divine order. Stop, release the problem, and state all is in divine order. Do not give the problem a past, do not give the problem a future or even a present, but state what is the solution right now that is important in your mind. So here we have the bolts coming off the trailer. And you say, well, that's so mundane. Well, there is nothing mundane in our spiritual life, and all is our spiritual life, I assure you. So we have the bolts coming off the trailer. Now we can see that trailer secure and sound with the bolts soundly positioned on the trailer, and we don't have to do a thing about it. We don't have to walk out there and put the bolts on. We don't have to tell someone to go out there and put the bolts on. We live in the conscious awareness that this trailer is a sound trailer and a delight to use. This trailer is in divine order right now. It's a sound trailer and a delight to use. This trailer is a sound trailer and a delight to use. Whatever must be done to make it a sound trailer and a delight to use is done now. It is not something I'm making happen. It is not something I wish to happen. It is something that is taking place right now. It is a sound trailer and a delight to use. All is in divine order with my trailer. Oh, come on, Herb. You're wasting a lot of time on something so insignificant. You just need a wrench and a couple of nuts and bolts and stick them on there, and then it's done. All this treating and praying for something that is so logically and so reasonably fixed is certainly not important. Why are you spending time thinking about that? Well, good question. The answer? It is something that you can think through from beginning to end, and that you can conceive of as being sound and perfect. You, by your logic, by your reason, can see tightening the bolts and putting new nuts and bolts in where they're missing will make it sound and very good. You can see that. It is not something beyond your ken, beyond your reason, your logic, your understanding. You can see that. How then do we bring such a thing about? Well, we don't. We put the cause in motion. All is in divine order. All is in divine. But it's so easy just to go out there and put the stupid nut and bolt in there and be done with it. Yes, that's true. But we're teaching right now, living in the first person, present tense, positive. We're teaching right now, putting the law of cause and effect into motion. We're teaching right now, all is in divine order. If you say all is in divine order and your body isn't feeling too well, and somewhere in your body there is some bacteria that is destroying you, somewhere in your body there is something that is not functioning properly and it'll kill you in a very short time, somewhere in your body are nonsense things that are going on and they're not very nice, you don't know what it is, the doctor cannot diagnose this, there's nobody who can come up with a solution, then you say all is in divine order, because then you're on your last leg, then you are on your last consideration, your last belief. There's no other way. Well, why do we wait until the last minute? Why do we wait until there's no other solution, there's no other way? Train ourselves now in the idea all is in divine order. I have a sound and secure trailer, all is in divine order. I have a sound and, you see, you can really visualize that. And now, I have a sound body. All is in divine order. I have a sound body. All is in divine order. My body is in divine order right now. Whatever that situation is that was not too good, whatever the doctors could not diagnose, is now in divine order. You take Norman Cousins, who had the concept that laughter would take away his cancer, that laughter would dissolve the cancer. Well, he was right, because he changed his attitude. He changed his attitude about life. He changed his attitude about everything. All was in divine order, but he didn't put it in divine order. When he started laughing, he put it in divine order. Now, who is to know that laughter is going to be the solution for everybody's problem who has cancer, or everybody's problem who has anything wrong with them? Well, it could be and it could not be. Norman Cousins believed that it would be, and for him it was. And for others who have practiced it, it is. Others have not been as famous as he and written books about it and gotten all the publicity that he did, but you can be sure there are hundreds and thousands of other people who have read his books and who have practiced that, and all is in divine order. They didn't know what was going to take place in their body, how laughter was going to release all of the enzymes and all of the chromosomes to function properly. You don't know how the DNA are all going to be functioning harmoniously together to bring about perfect health or the perfect body, which already exists. You're just calling forth your awareness of it. You don't know that. You have no idea. But when you begin to say all is in divine order, you begin to put the cause in motion for your trailer to be sound and secure. Oh, you're back to that trailer again. Yes, the trailer is sound and secure. Our body is sound and secure. All is in divine order. Are you ready to make a statement like that? All is in divine order. It's a great statement, I assure you. But are you ready for it? It's not an easy thing to do, because we are so often drawn away from the logic of it. We're so often drawn away from the reasonableness of it. We're so often drawn away from the fact that it's too simple. It's too simple. You say, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. That's too simple. My goodness sakes, that's too simple. I've got to say, I am a genius. I know all of this knowledge right now. I am wise and wonderful. Well, that sounds good too. But I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer. You see, there only one little problem exists. And that problem is, do you believe that God in you exists? Do you believe that there is a God in you? Do you believe that the universal allness of God is you, in you? Do you believe that? Well, you don't have to believe it, but do you sort of recognize that that's so? When you sort of recognize that that's so, then it's not difficult to give the responsibility to that inner presence. It's not difficult to call forth that inner presence and say, you are the one, you are the fulfillment of my self, of my dream, of my desire, now, now, now. In the first present, past, the first present, my goodness, I'm stumbling over that, aren't I? Right now, first person, present tense, positive. This is what we're dealing with. This is how we're living our life. This is what we want to put into motion for ourselves. This is who we are. We're not living in a future tense. We're not living in a past tense. We're living in the present tense. Now, all is in divine order now. I am whole and perfect now. My trailer is sound and wonderful now. Sounds good, doesn't it? The more you roll it over your lips, the better it sounds. It sounds very positive, very dynamic, very wonderful. And it does work. We saw the movie Pollyanna, in which Pollyanna went around being a loving little girl. And the people who met her saw her through her aunt's eyes rather than through Pollyanna's eyes. And they saw a conniving little child, a little child who was going around trying to be a goody-goody person when they really weren't so goody-goody. And as Pollyanna said to one man, you're my friend, I like you. He says, don't try to be a goody-goody person and bring things to me and make me feel good. And she merely said, but I like you. You see, the innocence of a child doesn't look at that. We use this illustration so often, the little child comes screaming in the house, Mommy, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you. And the wise mother says, what seems to be the problem, sweetheart? The unwise mother would say, you're a naughty little boy, I'll wash your mouth out with soap, go sit in the corner. Totally irrespective of the emotions the child is going through. But this is how the divine in us is. The divine in us says, there, there, what seems to be the problem? Let's find the solution now. And all of a sudden, everything is in divine order. When we talk to our body and we say, there, there, all is in divine order now. What seems to be the problem? We don't want to know the problem. We don't need to know the problem. We say, all is in divine order now. But it makes us feel good when we say, what is the problem? We don't listen to it. We don't want the problem in our consciousness. We only want that all is in divine order is in our consciousness. We only want to put that concept in our consciousness so that concept can be our reality. Are we ready for such a thing? Are we ready for such an experience? It's quite a wonderful experience and really quite marvelous if we would get down to it. But are we ready for it? If you're ready for it, you will experience it. And you will experience it because you are ready for it. There's no place for a past or a future. We live in the present tense. We live in this wonderful world of now. And as we live in this wonderful world of now, we experience everything now. We experience everything. All of the ideas, all of the dreams, all of the desires, all of the fulfillment. We have a perfect body. I live in my ideally perfect spiritual mind and body right now. Spirit, mind, and body right now. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body right now. When we put these positive statements in motion, such wonderful things happen. We have a great statement here. It says, these grounds are healing grounds. All who enter here experience their original purity and integrity. These grounds are healing grounds. All who enter here experience their original purity and integrity. People come to campus all the time, and they have healing needs. They have emotional needs. They have relationship needs. They have health needs, whatever their needs may be. And they come to campus and they say, I'm going to be healed. I'm going to be healed of that need that I have. And many are, and some are not. Those who are healed are those who are living in the present tense, and they say, these grounds are healing grounds. I enter these healing grounds, and I experience my original purity and integrity. Now, to experience your original purity and integrity, which is indwelling in you, never been away from you, you change your awareness like Norman Cousins. Instead of thinking of the cancer as something that's killing him, he's laughing his head off. He is having a time of his life. He is taking his mind away from the negativity of the cancer to the positivity of laughter and joy and peace and harmony and goodness. Now, this you can do. This you can do. I surround this campus with my pure white light of love. All its ways are peace and all its paths are pleasantness. See, everyone who comes here, they learn these statements, and they surround this campus with their pure white light of love, and they live in their original purity and their original integrity. It's a wonderful thing to experience, and a wonderful thing to know and to have. Can you do that? Can you live in the present tense? Can you forget the past? We never can forget the past. Can we forget the future? Well, we can never forget the future. But we can live in the past, in the present. Norman Cousins lived in the present with laughter. He did not live in the past where there was an apparent illness. He did not live in the future, death, ha, ha, ha. That was not part of his life. He lived in the present. He lived in the happy, harmonious present. And he was healed. And he went on to do many, many more wonderful things, back to the tennis court and back to being active and fully involved in life. Oh, he's not the only example. He's merely a popular example that we have heard from time to time. You too are a popular example. You too live in your original purity and integrity. You too have done wonderful things many times, expressing the divine within you. All is in divine order. All is in divine order. Let these words be like a living mantra for us as we say, all is in divine order. All is in divine order. No matter what comes to our attention, whether it's tightening up the screws and bolts on the trailer, or whether it's healing our bodies, or whether it's having a harmonious relationship, or whether we can't get along with someone, if we just say, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, all is in divine order, why do we let people touch us? You see, this is a very sad point about our life. We let people touch us because we think they should be like we are. And of course they are. They are exactly like we are, and that's what drives us up the wall. We look at other people and we judge them, and we judge them because they're exactly like we are. They have the same desires, the same hurts, the same wants, the same experiences. They are just like we are because we see them with our eyes. Now, we might say this is sort of a strange way of looking in the present tense. But that's the only tense we have to live with, to work with, the present tense. You can live in the present tense. You can be in the present tense. You can experience in the present tense. And you can have a ball in the present tense, if such is your desire. Do you desire to do that? Do you desire to be a happy camper? Do you desire to live in a happy, harmonious way in which you are the allness right now? If you do, You will be so delighted and so content and so happy that you just won't know how to handle it, because it's such a joyous, beautiful experience. Now, living in the present tense has sometimes been referred to as hypnotism. Hypnotism may be likened to creating timelessness. And we repeat that. Hypnotism may be likened to creating timelessness. You see, when a person is hypnotized, they are not in the flow of time. Time exists around them, but they are existing outside of time. They are existing in a realm and a world that is uniquely their own. I don't recommend hypnotism by others, but self-hypnosis is something that we do all the time. We're all the time hypnotizing ourselves with, it's going to be an accident, it's so terrible. You see, you're hypnotizing yourself by doing that. Yes, very much so. That's a very dynamic, hypnotic activity when you are so fearful and so frightened of something that's going to take place in your life. Oh my, yes. And it is now, it is now, it is now, and it is terrible. And your emotions are all involved in it. Your life's all involved in it. You think of all the ramifications that such an incident might have upon you that you're hypnotizing yourself to believe in. And then you are putting a new cause in motion. You're hypnotizing yourself with a new concept. And you're saying, I am whole and perfect. Every organ, action, function of my body is whole and perfect. My body is the temple of the living God. My body is whole and perfect, now and forevermore. Every organ, action, function of my body is perfect. And you go on with these words. You go on with these concepts. But Herb, they're not true. They're not true. Look at me. Can't you see? They're not true. And I say, I look at you and I see you whole and perfect because I am whole and perfect. I am whole and perfect, and I cannot see you less than whole and perfect. You may have a broken leg, but I see it's a whole and perfect broken leg. Now, if you want me to see you with a whole leg, not broken any longer, then present that to me. Present that concept to me, that your leg is whole and perfect. Oh, but it's in a cast. Yes, but it's whole and perfect. Oh, but it's not yet healed. Yes, but it's whole and perfect. It's returning to its original purity and integrity in your consciousness, in your world, in your thinking. You see, you're hypnotizing yourself. Some people hypnotize themselves. Oh, it'll never heal. It'll never heal. It'll never heal. And lo and behold, it doesn't heal. And they say, see, a self-fulfilling prophecy. They say, see, it doesn't heal. It doesn't heal. And you are pacing that cause in motion. You're empowering that. And you're bringing that to be right now in the first person present tense positive. And how silly that is. And we do that. And you know hundreds of people in your world who do that. And that's one of the reasons why perhaps you do that too. Because you're creating those people doing that. And the more you create to do that, the more power you give to doing it. Now, we can put a new cause in motion. And we can say, I'm whole and perfect. We can say, I am experiencing and expressing my original purity and integrity. Right now, we can put the cause in motion for wholeness, for perfection. Right now, in the first person present tense, right now, not in the future, not in the past, but right now, right this second, right this instant. You know, if we could really once know how it feels to live in the present tense, if we could just once know how it feels to be whole and perfect, to be fabulous, to be joyous, to be marvelous, in the first person present tense positive, just one moment, if we would know that, we would never forget it. We would never go away from it. But we allow ourselves to instantly go into the past. Someone comes and says, I had my appendix out. You instantly tell them you had your appendix out and you had a 4-inch scar and they had only a 3-inch scar. I had a bigger scar than you did. And you say to I don't really like to go and have an operation, but it looks like I might have to do that. Oh, that's okay. And he rips open his shirt and says, here, I had a quadruple bypass, and they put in a new heart pump for me, and they did this and did that. And you say to yourself, Thanks a lot. You know, I really needed to know that. We shut up on all of these things that are negative, and we say we're whole and perfect. We don't ignore going to the doctor. We go to the doctor when we feel badly, and we say, "Doctor, what would you recommend?" But all the time we're saying, "I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect." Quite likely by the time you get to the doctor's office, you are whole and perfect and you don't need the help. You know how often it is that your tooth aches terribly, and by the time you get to the dentist, it's okay. It stopped aching. But you know that it's going to start aching again. You know that that tooth is going to get you again. And so you go in and you have it looked at, and you have it x-rayed, and you find out what the cause of that toothache is, and you have it taken care of. Now, if the moment your tooth feels sensitive, you say, "My teeth are whole and perfect, my teeth are whole and perfect, my teeth are whole and perfect," and every time your tooth speaks to you in any way and it's a little sensitive, "My teeth are whole and perfect, my teeth are whole and perfect," and then don't deny this possibility, not possibility, but this segment of the program, go see your dentist. And then your dentist will say, "Well, your teeth are whole and perfect." Whatever it is you are putting into your consciousness and believing, so it is. The little hurt on your tooth now and then is a reminder to say, "My teeth are whole and perfect." Because how often do you say your teeth are whole and perfect unless they are giving you a little attention, unless they're demanding that you look at them or think about them? How often do we say all is in divine order unless we have a problem? We should be saying all is in divine order without problems. We should say all is in divine order when divine order is the only thing that there is. We have that possibility. We have that probability. We have that opportunity. For us, it is the most wonderful thing in the world to live in the now, to live in the present tense, to live in the isness, in the allness, to live right this moment in the oneness of all that exists. And the only way we can do that is by putting the cause in motion, by making this demand upon ourselves, by being so positive, so joyous, so pure, that there is no place for a past or a future. There is only a place for the present. You're pretty wonderful. I did not know me, the title of our lecture series here, I did not know me. And the reason I did not know me is that I lived in the illusion world, in the world of illusions, in the world of outer experiences. I never did go inside to meet my God, to meet myself, to meet my reality, to meet who I am. And now, as we are preparing to conclude this seminar, let's begin to live in that inner awareness, in that inner realm. And in a few moments we will have lecture 24, Now I Know Me. And in that we will bring together all the loose ends of knowing ourselves, being ourselves, and having fun doing it. So this moment I say to you, be at peace. There is no place for a past or a future. There is only the present.